definitely reach out. Tell me where you heard me. I would love that. And Gina's website is hydrationfoundation.org. She gives lots of tips and science and a really fun website and Instagram for her as well.
Fantastic. So today, again, we've been speaking with Dr. Dana Cohen, integrative medical physician and co-author of the book Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. Dr. Cohen, thank you so much for speaking with us today on Health Watch, and just fascinating book. I really found a lot of different levels to it that were quite wonderful.
Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Health Watch. This is Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host the second Monday of every month. You can listen to this episode and more online at kboo.org/healthwatch.
If every little thing that you did made a difference,
would you do things a little different?
This is Making Contact, a program that informs, inspires, and moves people to take action.
Now is the time to pass this bill.
Would you believe me if I told you
you're the reason we are here? Would there be meaning to your breathing
if your exhale made the air?
Students around the country are entering a new school year. What awaits them are new classes, new students, and hopefully new approaches to old problems. Some students at several prominent historically black colleges and universities, or HBCUs as we call them, have asked school administrators to address sexual assault differently. Last year, student protests at Morehouse College, Spelman College, Hampton University, and Howard University aim to highlight inadequacies in the way sexual assault and rape cases are handled. We're focusing on HBCUs because out of the nearly 5,000 colleges that exist in the U.S., just over 100 are categorized as historically black. Students at these schools, whom are predominantly black, tend to underreport sexual violence and are often not included in national conversations about it. We're interested in amplifying their voices and their particular take on the issue. With us today are a few current and former HBCU students who have a few things to say about the way sexual assault plays out at HBCUs and how to make campus safer for everyone. Let's do some quick introductions.
I'm Amos Jackson III. I'm a senior at Howard University. I'm the SGA president there, and I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
I'm Kyla Wright. I'm a senior as well, journalism major at Hampton University, and I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
I'm Yvette. I'm from New York. I'm on a book writing sabbatical in Denver right now, and I went to Bennett College in North Carolina.
Welcome, guys. I'm your host, Erin Mathewson, and I'm an alum of Howard University. You're listening to Making Contact in collaboration with Bitch Media and Dishonor Roll. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I'd like to hear from each of our guests about why you decided to attend a historically black college. And for anyone who's not familiar, these are institutions that were established before 1964 with the purpose of educating black Americans when other institutions would not. Students of all races are welcome, but black culture is often celebrated to a high degree at these places. So Amos, let's start with you. Why did you choose Howard?
Funny enough, I had no intention of going to an HBCU. My whole family went to HBCUs. And I was like, no, I want to be different. I want to go to a top-tier institution. I don't want to go to an HBCU. And then, funny enough, I didn't get the ACT score for those institutions that were recruiting me. And so I committed to this small Division III school. And ironically, one Sunday at church, I met this guy. So he invited me to this Sigma Pi Phi Boule chapter meeting. He set me up by bringing all of these prominent Howard alum that lived in Florida. And I was like, okay. I called my dad that day, and I was like, I'm going to Howard.
So I dealt with racism at a very young age. So I went on a black college tour with my church and fell in love with all the HBCUs from Tennessee State to Hampton and Spelman, everywhere. So I knew by about the 9th or 10th grade that I wanted to go to a HBCU. So I got scholarship money, fortunately, to go to Hampton. Hampton gave me the highest scholarship. It was a beautiful campus. They had a top-tier journalism program and everything in between. I knew I wanted to be surrounded by people who looked like me, who acted like me, and who had the same morals and values as me, and I didn't want to succumb to racism for any longer. It was literally the best decision I've made. My children will be attending HBCUs. They don't have a choice. And that is it.
That's funny. Yvette, what about you?
I knew very early on that I wanted to attend a historically black college or university. And so I encountered some struggles when I got to high school and ended up dropping out when I was 16. And HBCUs were the only institutions who were willing to accept someone who took the SAT but did not have a traditional high school diploma. And so I applied to three HBCUs. The one I decided initially to attend was the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And I attended there for a year and then encountered some money troubles. And so I was actually sitting at home. I had taken a semester off watching CNN, and I saw Bennett College's former president, Dr. Julianne Malvo, just talking about this school I'd never heard of before. And she was just singing all of its praises. Like, if you're a black girl who wants to turn into a black woman and be educated and celebrated, like, this is the school that you should go to. And I'll agree with both of the people who went before me that it's the best decision I've ever made.
Well, I'm glad everybody enjoyed their experiences, because we all know some people who did not enjoy their experiences at HBCUs. But before we dive into the way sexual assault impacts your campuses, I just wanted to talk about the bigger context we find ourselves in right now. Like, I just feel like we're in this Me Too moment, and I'm wondering how this has affected your conversations on campus. Like, I feel like there's a lot of progressive art and music coming out at the same time as some pretty misogynistic stuff. I still can't get over R. Kelly's single, I Admit. But then I wonder if it's countered by songs like Nice for What from Drake. So I'm just curious, how has all this affected your conversations about sex and sexual assault?
What I found since, especially because we're approaching the 1 year anniversary of Me Too, is that there are far more people who are willing to have these conversations and to have them publicly. And I think social media has played a big part in that, in terms of being able to respond immediately to, say, R. Kelly's terrible 19-minute song, I Admit, or being able to foster a conversation publicly in a way that they may not be able to do in their own families, especially if they're encountering pushback. And so I don't know if Me Too is really the catalyst for that. I think it's been happening prior to that, particularly among feminists online. But I think that we are shifting national consciousness about what sexual violence looks like, what sexual assault looks like, and the way that institutions work to protect people who are already powerful and how they turn out the powerless.
And I agree. Like, I think it's so sad that Me Too was started by a black woman, but it didn't really garner support until a white woman.
No one knew
until a white woman said something about Me Too. Mm. So that's even something that even goes into a deeper aspect of, like, HBCUs. Similar to the political engagement, civic engagement of black people that stemmed from Donald Trump and people like him being elected into office and that whole Roy Moore situation, there was a silver lining in it, because it also made people more aware that, like, if a guy got elected president of the United States, it has to be happening at least down the street from you. I think we're going to see a response to that too, following Me Too and all of these prominent people that you used to look up to, and now you're like, wow, how can I not condemn and really change the conversation?
Yeah. And I would just add that change the conversation is something we're trying to do right here. Like, let's talk about the dating scene first, since according to the Center for Disease Control, just over 50% of female victims of rape reported being assaulted by an intimate partner, and just over 40% by an acquaintance. And I feel like at HBCUs in particular, this conversation gets tied up into morality, because I feel like a lot of the schools are kind of like unofficially connected to, or, you know, very openly celebrate various forms of Christianity. Yvette, what do you, when you were an undergrad, and Yvette and I should say, I don't want to speak for Yvette, I was in undergrad a little bit over, about 13 years ago. Yvette, what about you?
Yeah, I finished undergrad 6 years ago. Okay. So it has been a while. But I attended a same-sex college, and so the dating was a little difficult unless you wanted to venture to another campus. So a lot of the dating was happening across campuses, or mostly Bennett girls were going to North Carolina A&T because our college didn't allow men on campus. And when they did come on campus, they were being harassed by security. They were not allowed to go into our dormitory rooms if you lived on campus. They had to stay in the parlor. And so if you had a male visitor who wanted to come by, he would like become a spectacle. And so much of what they consider dirt needs to be done off campus or out of the eye of the administrations. And so a lot of the relationships that I had when I was in college were very private. But I think on the flip side of that, I'm very fortunate that I never encountered sexual violence when I was in college. But had I don't know if I would have been comfortable saying, hey, I've been assaulted, given that I was basically lambasted for having fun as a college student.
If you're just tuning in, this is Making Contact, RadioProject.org, and the Dishonor Roll Reporting Project. You were just hearing the voice of Amos Jackson, a senior at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Before him was Yvette Dion of Bitch Media and an alum of Bennett College in North Carolina. Next up is Kyla Wright, who's a senior at Hampton University in Virginia. So, Kyla, what's going on at Hampton?
So Hampton is definitely going through it right now when it comes to the sexual assault realm. So as far as Amos talked about at Howard and having sexual assault seminars every semester and having it on your syllabus, we're definitely not there yet. And that's hopefully a direction that we're headed to, but we're not anywhere close as of right now. And even I've heard a lot of young women on campus talk about going to the health center about having a sore throat or having a chronic headache or something, and they end up turning it around and asking them, like, oh, are you sexually active? You need to take a STD test. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I have a headache or the fact that my throat hurts, so why are you asking me about my sexual activity? And then that turns into judgment. And it's very uncomfortable. And even when you answer the questions, the reactions, you can see the reactions in the nurse's face. If it's like, oh, I'm not sexually active, they're like, oh, good, keep it that way. Or, yeah, I'm sexually active, oh, well, why? Like, it's just, it's very weird. It's very uncomfortable. The only resource that we really have the students are semi-comfortable with and just now becoming more comfortable with is the Student Counseling Center, which has a program called the Peer Advocates, which I'll actually be the president of this upcoming school year. And it's a organization or it's a program that specifically is geared towards sexual assault, dating violence, stalking, domestic violence, etc. And it's that organization that everyone kind of wants to be a part of or wants to talk to, but at the same time wants to shy away from because it's all the taboo topics that everyone wants to keep quiet about as well. So we're trying to make it more of an open dialogue because it shouldn't be something that's kept quiet on campus, especially because it happens so often. And in my research, I've come to find out that in the average 4-year tenure, 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted on a college campus.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that you're going to lead the Peer Advocates. I'm wondering if you could actually share a little bit more about your experience and how you got to know all these services so well.
So my freshman year at Hampton, unfortunately, I was a part of that statistic. So I was assaulted on campus by someone who I thought was my friend, someone who was a prominent figure on campus, someone who I was very comfortable with. So at that time, I was extremely, like, I shut down from the world. Like, I shut down from everyone, everything. I was not talking about it. I was not even admitting the fact that it happened. Like, I was just like, I don't really know what it is, but it's not that. I don't know. I'm just not going to talk about it. And then after I finally started talking to my parents and started talking to really close friends and family members, I started figuring out that, and doing research, I started figuring out that obviously I wasn't alone and it wasn't just me. So I had to try to figure out in some way, shape, or form how to be that voice and how to come out about this situation because it was happening to other people. And obviously they weren't speaking out about it either. And this is when I began to, well, I didn't report it until about 4 months after it happened. And then even after I did, so I started to learn the process and how it worked on campus as far as reporting it and if you got a case or if you didn't get a case and how Hampton solved the situation or if they didn't solve the situation and all that. And in my sophomore year, I created a platform called Operation SASH. SASH is an acronym for Sexual Assault Stops Here. And I competed in the Miss Black and Gold Scholarship Pageant, and that was my platform throughout the entire... Yes, Amos. So that was my platform during the entire pageant, and I placed second. So I stood by that platform, and even though I hadn't actually won the pageant, I still used that platform to help other women on campus.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I'm curious... And I'm going to open this up to everybody else, but were you believed, like, when you first came forward, do you feel like people believed you, or did you feel like you had to, like, prove something to the people asking you questions and, like, that you what the experience you had was real?
Yeah, no. Like, no one believed me. Even after I finally came to terms with it, I was in a group of about 8 friends that were, like, my main friends. We all stayed on the same hall. And it was like, when I came out to my friends and told them what happened, it was like, did it really? Okay, we'll help you. Okay. And then after it started to get real, like, it seemed like the more comfortable I got with it, the more uncomfortable they got with it. And so I ended up losing all my friends freshman year. They were like, no, I don't really think this is how this is supposed to go. I don't really know if this did happen to you, if you're trying to get attention, or like, what do you mean this isn't the way to go? Like, I reported it to the university. I'm trying to get him kicked off campus, like, whatever. And everything I was trying to do to keep my support system strong, it backfired on me, honestly. So it was them. And then after I got, so when you report the incident to the Title IX office or to HUPD, they have an investigation with you and the person you say was the assailant, and they decide whether or not you get a case. So I had to go in front of a board of administrators and talk about what happened. He was there. He was in the room. I ended up finding out that wasn't supposed to happen that way.
He was in the room?
He wasn't supposed to be in the same room as me. Yes, it was very, it was really weird. It was the most awkward thing ever. Yeah. Mm. So that happened, and it was like the administration were like grilling me. They're just like, what did you have on? Well, why were you at his house? Well, why were you this? Well, why were you that? And I'm like, what? Wait, hold on, pause, stop. What? It was a very alone time in my life. So I'm glad, obviously, I'm not there anymore, because during that time, I literally couldn't talk about it without busting out in tears, without crying and having anxiety attacks. So clearly I've grown, which is, I think, the greatest thing that has happened out of this whole situation, that I've grown and that I can help other people.
It sounds like what I learned from Kyla is that she had to kind of prove herself to her friends and to the administration. And I'm wondering, for Yvette and Amos, like, at your campuses, did you find that the student body is supportive when they hear about sexual assault cases? And then, you know, I'm wondering if your friends or people you know who have experienced sexual assault, if they have felt comfortable in the administration space and also the social space at campus.
I can say at Howard, a lot of women aren't as inclined to report because they have friends or they know people that have reported and haven't seen an output. Like my mentee, like one of the closest women to me on campus, that happened to her. I was the first person she called. I took her to the interpersonal violence office, and because she was afraid to report, and I was like, no, like as a student employee of the university, like as soon as you tell me, and now I am required to report it myself. And so, like, now I have to. I know that I may break our mentee-mentor relationship trust here, but I have to, and I think it'll serve you well with me doing so. And I hate the fact that it had to take somebody happening to me close for me to really, really, really put my hands to the plow to make it a priority for my administration and for other student leaders. But again, I think that we're moving in the right direction with that, like looking to hire more Title IX investigators. Because I think one of the things that really hurts HBCUs, especially when it comes to issues like these, is that the resources we have are very slim. So instead of trying to find creative ways, we overcompensate and aren't honest about the issues that we have going on our campuses. Because there's creative ways to assist survivors and to discipline assailants.
What about you, Yvette?
Well, my college is a little complicated because we haven't reported a sexual assault in nearly 5 years, which based on national statistics is inaccurate. and there it's impossible that there is no sexual assault that has happened on Bennett College's campus in 5 years. But what that indicates to me is that we either don't have the proper protocols in place for victims of sexual violence to come forward and feel as if they'll be believed and that justice will be served, or these cases are being swept under the rug. And there's no evidence either way, but I can recall, especially in when I was at the beginning of my undergraduate career, there were always whispers and rumors about students who had been sexually violated, but it was always happening among student groups or among groups of friends. It was never happening on an administrative level. Like, we were never having town hall meetings about sexual violence. I can recall one specific student in particular who said that she had been raped, and the next semester she didn't come back and we never saw her again. And so much of the conversation around sexual assault and rape and how colleges handle it does, as Amos said, has to do with resources. So Bennett is a school with 500 students. They rely mostly on student tuition to fund the institution. 90% of the time we are either facing financial probation or we're on financial probation. And so when it comes to the strategic way that they allocate resources, it's as if they don't see curbing sexual assault and making sure that those who have been assaulted have the proper resources as a institutional priority.
Wow. We've kind of discussed that, like, sexual assault goes underreported. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that, A, you know, Black people are already overrepresented in the prison system and the jail, and you're not trying to add to that? And B, there's kind of like this family, quote unquote, culture at HBCUs, and so it feels bad to kind of like tell on your brother or your sister. Do you think that's part of what goes on?
Yes, absolutely. I think reputation for HBCUs is everything, primarily because they are underfunded. And so the things that administrations choose to prioritize and focus on are designed to increase enrollment. And so one of my professors always says that most HBCUs run like a Black church, and that is very much the case at Bennett. And so they approach it as, we put on a united front, even if we have inner turmoil. And so you are never supposed to speak badly of the school. You don't speak badly of other students. At Bennett, we call each other sisters. If sexual assault is happening, and based on national statistics, it probably is, why they are not reporting it.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. And I just want to thank all of you so much. Kyla Wright, senior from Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. Amos Jackson, also a senior at Howard University in Washington, D.C., where I'm also an alum. And Yvette Dion, editor-in-chief of Bitch Media and alumna of Bennett College, and the co-producer of this panel. Before we close out the show, I want to mention that we reached out to Howard, Hampton, and Bennett to get their responses to the comments made by Amos, Kyla, and Yvette. Listeners can see the full statements on our website. To hear the entire unedited discussion, go to radioproject.org. Thanks for tuning in to Making Contact and our special roundtable episode in the Dishonor Roll Reporting Collaborative. Thanks especially to Bitch Media's Yvette Dion and Andy Zeisler for their editorial input. Thanks to Joellen Kaiser and the Media Consortium for a mini-grant for our Dishonor Roll participation. Special thanks for recording facilities at the studios of WPFW in D.C., WDET in Denver, ESPN in New York, KGNU in Denver, and recordists Brianna Tinsley, Sam Bubin, Dave Ashton, Tim Russo, Robin Smith, and Katia Stitt. Thanks to Climbing Poetry for the opening poem and for the music by Jazar and Scanglobe. I'm Erin Mathieson in New York for Making Contact. www.radioproject.org.
And you're listening to Making Contact here on KBOO Community Radio. We are in the midst of our fall membership drive. This is a time when we come to you, the listener, and ask for your support to amplify your voice and help us make history here at KBOO Community Radio. And we're asking for people to support this programming and the radio station here at this station that's been providing the voice for the Me Too movement since before it became a mainstream topic and after the mainstream corporate media let it go and stopped talking about it. KBOO has kept this issue alive. This is the station of resistance. This is the station for environmental justice, social activism, policy making. You find out about the issues here and you get empowered to make change right here in your community. Explore approaches to problem solving that make the world a better place. Here at KBOO Community Radio, your membership helps make this kind of programming possible, and you can inspire others to do the same. The number to call is 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. The amount you give is up to you, but I would encourage you to at least consider $6.25 a month. That way you get your KBOO t-shirt. You have several different options. A Keep Portland Radical t-shirt, a KBOO logo t-shirt. Those are both black shirts. You can see what they look like on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. You can also give online. And inspiration, Ron, a renewing member from Mama. Thank you so much, Ron, for joining KBOO. We have just about 5 minutes left to reach our goal for this hour, and we need you to be the one to put us over the top. If just two people call with that $6.25 a month membership, we will hit the goal. Be the hero for Morning Public Affairs today. Call 877-500-5266. Make a decision to be a part of KBOO. Support something great in your community. There's something here that speaks to you, and we want to continue that work. This is an essential part of the media. This is a democracy on the airwaves, small d democracy. This is a place where people come together and make radio. These conversations here happen because of the support of our listeners. There's never been a more important time to support community radio. This is independent media at its best. Don't take it for granted. KBOO is one of those stations that's out here only because of member support, and we need you to continue that support. Your membership serves you and thousands of others with learning, culture, information, and liberated entertainment. KBOO matters. Your support matters. It takes just a few minutes to join, and if you call right now, you can get a KBOO t-shirt. Keep Portland Radical. It is a really cool looking shirt. It's got a pink and black and white, and it has our tower logo, the 90.7 with a star on top of a tower radiating outwards. We want to thank Linda, a renewing member from Southeast Portland, Susan, renewing from Northeast, and Randall, renewing from Hood River. Thank you all so much. And you could be the next person that we thank. You know, we've heard from Northeast Portland, Southeast Portland. How about Northwest, Southwest Portland? How about Beaverton, Gresham? I know that you're listening and you can support Salem. How about Philomath and Corvallis and down where our translators are in Hood River. We heard from Randall in Hood River, so thank you so much. And if you can be the person to put us over the top, you'll be the hero for this hour. We know that KBOO speaks to you between the shows like Making Contact, like The Food Show, like Health Watch that you heard this morning, like Locust Focus. We have Black Book Talk. We have disability awareness. You hear about a wide variety of topics that impact you and the people around you, and you explore these new opportunities. Approaches to problem solving. There are so many ways nowadays to take in media, but so much of it sounds the same. KBOO sounds different. We're real people making real radio. We are the members of your community coming in, getting trained, getting on the air, and this is how this station happens. It's so important that we have listener support because without it, we won't be able to continue. We've been here 50 years thanks to listener support. KBOO's 50th anniversary is this year, and we are going to continue for 50 more years because we know that our listeners are supportive and they're going to keep this going. And it's only done through these gifts from you. You choose how much to give. It's an amazing experiment that Lou Hill started way back in the day with KPFA. KBOO has continued that experiment, and you are the person that can help us this hour this minute, because we only have a minute until 12 o'clock and we need you to support and help this show reach its goal. We just need two calls at $6.25 a month. $6.25 a month is doable for many people. Think about it. Sign up now. 877-500-5266. 877-500-KBOO.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a musical history tour by David Robix on Saturday, September 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Music Center in Portland. David Robix will perform a musical history tour, historical anecdotes, and songs about refugees, child migrants, immigration, trade wars, social movements, and more. These historical examples will help us understand our present times. Again, that's a musical history tour by David Robix on Saturday, September 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore will take the stage in the season opener on Friday, September 21st. For over 30 years, singer Molly O'Brien and guitarist Rich Moore have made it their mission to unlock the secrets of the canon of American roots music. They are geniuses at interpreting the essence of the songs they tackle. Experience them live at the Portland Folk Music Society season opener on Friday, September 21st at Reedwood Friends Church, located at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. The concert begins at 7:30 with doors opening at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On his Martin guitar, the poor folk thinks he's gonna be a star.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Cameo Cafe, located at 8111 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, serving burgers, breakfast, and brunch from 6:30 to 3 every day. Lunch provided by Bridge.